My next guest is on the line. He is Adar Weinreb. We've spoken to him, it feels to me, about 10 days ago or so. Interesting conversation. A part of me struggling with just the very idea of talking about peace so soon after the 7th of October, thinking to what extent do you even have bandwidth to hear the message? And then another part of me thinking, if not now, when? And maybe it's precisely in the difficult times that we need to have these conversations. So, Adar Weinreb, thank you again for chatting to me on Chai FM.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Great to be back.
I thought we could maybe get a little bit more into your personal story this afternoon, starting all the way from your Aliyah, going into the IDF, coming out from soldier to peacemaker. And then I also want to touch on head-on AI, Grateful Giraffes, the whole shebang. So over to you. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your Israel connection.
Sure, happy to. Just so I know how to frame everything, how much time do we have for this segment?
About 12 minutes.
Okay, great. Plenty of time. So, you know, I grew up in New Jersey to a Jewish American Israeli household. My dad being Israeli for many generations. So my family actually moved to Ottoman Palestine in 1812.
Oh, wow.
So I have very deep roots on the land. And from a young age, it was, you know, I learned the general Zionist narrative. This is our land. I was never taught to hate Palestinians, but that we need to defend ourselves against them because they're going to keep trying to take it from us. And it was also put in my head from a young age that the best way to support your people in your country is to join the IDF. So that's what I did. I turned 18 and I made Aliyah. I joined the IDF. And interestingly, it was my time in the IDF when I started having a little shift in how I see things. I was looking at a poster on the wall that was showing different Hamas training techniques. And there was a Hamas soldier crawling through sand. And, you know, I'd been crawling through sand that very same day. And I kind of looked at him, at my sworn enemy, and I kind of saw myself. And, I asked myself, I said, wait a minute. If I was born in Gaza, would that be me? Does his family view him as a hero and me as a terrorist? Can that be? Now, these views didn't change my these questions I was asking myself didn't change my views overnight, but it did kind of plant a seed that got me thinking that maybe the biggest difference between us is really where we were born and what we were taught. And so perhaps humanizing one another is an important way to just break down these walls of fear and mistrust and separation. So in the years after the IDF, I started learning, getting to know Palestinians and learning more about them. And I understood that they're not all too different from us. They're people that want to live good lives. They're the same way we're convinced that we'll never have peace because of them. They're convinced they'll never have peace because of us. And I also understood that the IDF, which is very revered because it provides us for protection, right? We need the IDF for security on the land. It's also a force that is oppressive towards them. You know, it's not purely a defense force. It's a force that does many things in excess that harms many people. And what I view as a protector, they view as an oppressor. And the reality I was raised on is a fair bit more complex than what I had initially been taught. So that kind of got me into the peace and reconciliation work and getting to know both sides better and trying to bring both sides together. I'd been doing this for years on and off. You know, I was always involved in other in entrepreneurial ventures, which took up most of my time. So
Do you have whom to talk to on the other side? And I'll tell you where this question is coming from. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. I see that Corey Gil-Schuster going into the Judea, Samaria, West Bank, whatever you want to call it, interviewing everyday Palestinians on the street. And there's no room for accommodation. It's maximalist. Nobody's saying they want to live side by side in peace with Israelis. And that's the problem. Where does it leave somebody like me?
Yeah, so first of all, Corey's a friend of mine. I actually just had a call with him 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
And I think what Corey does is great because it really teaches us about...
He's not manufacturing it. It's real.
It's real. It's real. He doesn't cut anything out. He doesn't edit anything out. There is a little bit, though, of a bias because Palestinians, most of them don't agree to talk on camera for fear of backlash, A, from their own community, or fear of backlash from Israel. So there's actually a pressure in both directions. And I'm not sure exactly how this translates in the video, but Palestinians that speak might be like the most peaceful ones might not want to say, share their views, because they might not want extremists in their own society to face backlash. But it's also possible some of the more extreme voices don't express them because they don't want the IDF to come knocking because of something they said in the video. So while all the clips are real, he doesn't cut or edit anything. To me, it's unclear in which direction the bias is, because there's some consideration they have to take. But this is something I tell my Israeli friends all the time, my fellow Israelis, and just Jewish supporters of Israel. And I also tell this to my Palestinian friends who are concerned about the radical views within Israeli society. It's very normal and natural to be radicalized against your enemy. And that's not something that is inherent in us. Like, that changes if you change the environment. So all we need to look is public opinion polling amongst Israelis and Palestinians from year to year, and to see how drastically it changes, whether this is support for a two-state solution, whether this is support for violence, whether this is support for ethnic cleansing. The numbers change drastically from year to year, and certainly from decade to decade, and they're directly connected to the situation on the ground. So a population that has no faith in a better future, a population that whose only interaction with Jews are soldiers and settlers who don't treat them with dignity and respect, these are not people who are going to grow up with any love or compassion for Jews. Their experience reinforces, like we all often hear about problems in their education system, but even if they weren't taught anything about us, their everyday experience would give them a perception of us that is not quite true. So I don't give too much weight to the views of people in conflict with one another, because they're always very extreme. I just am confident that you could change people's views if you give them hope, if you give them positive experiences with the other side. It makes a world of difference. And again, yearly polling numbers do show us that public sentiment changes from year to year.
So then talk to me now about head-on and peace tech. What is this? Are you taking peace into the world of AI?
Yeah. So, you know, during COVID, I started doing these YouTube live streams where I would just have discussions and debates, bring Israelis and Palestinians together for conversations. And I saw the impact it was having. It's not content that goes viral, but it seems to be very impactful. I get messages all the time until today, people who discovered the content that I make and that their views have been changed, anywhere from anti-Zionists that say they now support two states to Israelis that say they never had compassion for Palestinians and now they understand their narrative. This is simply through having good faith conversations with one another. The problem is it's very hard to scale that, because people who vastly disagree, if you put them in a conversation without facilitation, it's generally not productive. And today, social media does not bring out the best in people.
That's for sure.
On one hand, social media has connected the world digitally, but we're more divided ideologically because of it. So we're trying to design a social media that brings out the best in us and helps people from opposing sides of different conflicts find common ground. So Israelis and Palestinians, but it could also be Democrats and Republicans, Russians and Ukrainians. It could help with internal issues within South Africa as well, right? We see a very divided world between countries and also domestically. And we believe that with the right technology and with the right tools, we can allow people to scale civil discourse globally. So that's what we're working on building now.
Adar, I didn't really want to get sidetracked, but I am getting messages in from people who I think are hurting after the 7th of October, justifiably so. So I am going to put a question to you from a listener who says, what about the Arabs who were taken into Israel for cancer treatment, given jobs, socialized with peace activists, and then gleefully took part in the atrocities? How does that work? I mean, clearly justifiable anger in the question itself.
Yeah, so I know that there's the, you know, famously Sinwar was treated for cancer and he was, you know, one of the leaders of Hamas. But in addition to that, I think the stories was workers who supposedly gave intel to Hamas about layouts of the kibbutzim. I don't know how prevalent it was for people who worked within Israel, who had relationships with the Jews, participating. Now, it is possible there were some, but I didn't hear any specific cases about that. But it's not about whether, certainly there are people who can still turn on who they perceive their enemy. So for example, you could have a situation where a Palestinian works in Israel because it's for their financial benefit,
sure,
but they still feel like there's a deep injustice. They feel like these people are living on their ancestral homeland and they don't have freedom to live there, that they don't have the same rights as them. And while they're going to take advantage of economic opportunity, they could still turn on the people who they view as their oppressor. But what we need to look at is the rate at which that happens. What's more likely? Palestinians who work amongst Jews turning on Jews, or Palestinians who have never met a Jew turning on Jews? And I think it's pretty clear.
Interesting.
Everything we know about human nature tells us that if you have positive interactions with people, especially on a daily basis, it's much harder to justify harm against those people. Now, I do want to say another thing. I think it is very possible that Palestinians that worked in Israel gave Hamas intel, but to me, it's not obvious that that's malicious. Imagine if Hamas brings you in for interrogation and threatens you and your family if you don't provide intel based on what you learned from working in Israel. Would you not give that to them? So I'm not even sure these civilians, the ones that gave intel, were necessarily nefarious. They very well may have been threatened into providing something. But again, I'm not going to paint this as if it's all kumbaya. I think I said this in the last conversation we had. The path to peace will come with some amount of violence. There's extremists in our society. Both are societies that are going to try to derail a peace process because they're aiming for their maximalist vision for the land. We will need to deal with them. The idea is that the majority of us are willing to compromise and can stand against violence, that there's a coalition of Israelis and Palestinians against the extremists. We need to change the paradigm and stop seeing this as Israel-Palestine, Israel versus Palestine, but rather extremists against everyone else, and have the moderates on both sides be a coalition against those who try to derail any attempt for peace.
Talk to me about Grateful Giraffes. What is Grateful Giraffes?
Yeah, so Grateful Giraffes is another startup that I founded, which I'm currently an advisor on because I left it to do head-on just because there was such an amazing opportunity. But Grateful Giraffes is this global community and lifestyle brand focused on elevating collective well-being. So we do events. We're primarily based out of New York, but we have a chapter in SF, New York, Tel Aviv. And the idea is globally at some point. And over time, we're giving ownership of the brand to our community, thereby aligning incentives amongst this awesome collective. And the idea is to build the brand, the product, services, and experiences that this brand provides together as a collective rather than just a small team of founders. So that work is definitely impact related, but it's not really related to Israel, Palestine, and all that.
Okay, no, I misunderstood. Final question for you, Zain Hadar, this afternoon. Are you hopeful?
Yeah, I mean, a lot can go wrong, you know, clearly. I think there's not strong political will in either of our societies for lasting and just peace. So there's a lot that can make me pessimistic, but I recognize that our best chance of succeeding is recognizing that there is a path forward towards a better future. And the best way to achieving that path is to believing that it's possible. So I'm not just blindly optimistic saying it's all going to work itself out. But what I'm saying is we need to recognize that there's definitely a path forward. And in believing that and acting towards it, we only increase our chance of achieving it. So that's what I'm calling on people to doing. It's not going to be easy. No, it's not simple, but there's a path and we need to work towards it.
Hadar, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. Thank you. Thank you for chatting to me.